Hello, hello. We are back with another episode of Talking to Grandma. I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. If this is your first time listening, make sure you check out the rest of our episodes with the variety of amazing guests after this one. As many of our listeners know, heritage language learning is hard, but made a lot easier when done in community. This is what Anita Sakuraya has created with her Instagram account, Bhasha Kids, which helps connect the South Asian diaspora to their heritage language. In today's episode, we hear Anita's story of how she is teaching her kids their heritage languages, even though these languages were nearly lost in her generation. She shares her vast knowledge of language and tips to make it easier to pass on languages to your children. Anita is the founder of Bhasha Kids, a startup that aims to create bilingual learning materials for kids learning South Asian languages. A public speaker, facilitator, trainer, mompreneur, and learning coach, Anita started Bhasha Kids in 2019 to help other South Asian diaspora families connect their kids with their heritage languages and cultures. Frustrated by not being able to find quality learning products to help her kids learn their heritage languages, she set out to create them herself. You are in for a treat today. This is a great conversation. Take notes and enjoy. Welcome to the show, Anita. We are so happy to have you here. I've been a big fan of your work for a very long time out in the world of the internets, Instagram. And so we're really happy to have you as a guest on the show. Can you start with telling us a little bit about your work and your organization and what inspires your passion for heritage language preservation?
Veronica, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I was so excited when your podcast came out because the title is so perfect, because it's really what we're all striving to do is to speak with our grandmothers and to connect with our families. And that is the passion. That's my passion now. It's, you know, what drives me to do my work is to help connect kids and new immigrant families and people in the South Asian diaspora with their heritage languages so they can talk with their grandma and their aunties and everyone back home. So again, my name is Anita Sakuraya. I am the founder of Bhasha Kids, and Bhasha means language. And that word Bhasha is the same word across all the various languages in India and in the South Asian region. It's Bhasha, Bhashe, but some form of it. And that's why I chose it for our title, because it would communicate to a lot of people. And if anyone knows anything about the South Asian region, especially India, the linguistic diversity is enormous. You go from one state to another in India, and it's a different language. It literally is a different language. It has different roots. A lot of people will say, well, isn't Hindi the national language of India? Well, it is the official language of the central government, but it's spoken by less than 50% of the people within India. The next official language is English, which I think a lot of people don't realize. So in India, in school, you'll go to actually take three languages in your school. So forget about a bilingual or dual immersion school. You will learn English, you will learn Hindi, and you will learn the regional language. So it's the norm. And of course, we have to caveat this with class levels. And in upper class, in middle class, it's the norm to learn multiple languages in India. And what I want to do is work with people who are like me, who are raising kids away from their homeland, and who are like me, who were raised away from their homeland and lost their language. My parents came here in the early 70s, you know, when the immigration laws changed, and they opened up to all different countries, and they decided we're going to have worker visas based on your expertise. And believe it or not, my mother is the one who got the visa because she was a nurse. And the Indians here will be laughing because there's a big joke about Malayali nurses because they're one of India's best exports, apparently. So my mother sponsored my father to come over, you know, a year later. And my brother and I were born in Brooklyn, New York. I settled down in South Florida. And therein was one of the first chinks in the my multilingual journey and my heritage language journey. The fact that I moved away from New York, which is has a huge Desi population, so much so that you could be segmented to just exactly your type of people, right? So I moved away from there. I moved to South Florida. There wasn't that many Indians there. Forget South Indians, forget South Indian Christians. You know, it was a very small group. And so everyone got together when they could. But, you know, Veronica, they were doing the immigrant hustle, right? My mother worked at two hospitals. She literally worked 7 days a week. My father was not college educated, but was a very, very intelligent man, but never had the opportunity to go to college. And he was working at Holiday Inn as the night clerk, right? And started his own business and lived the American dream from there. And you know, as an entrepreneur, how hard it is to make time in your life for anything else. And then raising young kids and then teaching them a language and a place where you are not supported, not even by, you don't have enough people to speak with. You don't have structural inputs to create that. And you're actively discouraged within the school system by pediatricians with a myth of, oh, if you teach them another language, they're going to get confused. And my story is the same as I think so many of your listeners. My mother said I spoke Malayalam, which is the language that comes from Kerala, which is in the state in southwest India. She said I spoke fluently until I was five. And what happened when I was five? Wow. I went to kindergarten. And then I was surrounded by English 9 hours a day. And, you know, I remember just feeling like, oh my gosh, I just want to be like everyone else and I don't want to stand out. I love growing up in Miami because it's so diverse and there's just so many types of brown and people are from all different places, but my language and my words were so different. And just like any kid, you want to stand out. And I remember having an argument in elementary school with my classmates and my mom would come on field trips and stuff. Your mom has an accent. And I got some like, no, she doesn't. She speaks English just fine. She probably did have an accent, but you know, I felt like they were saying something mean about her, you know, in my childlike understanding. And I tried many times to learn my language. And I'm a little bit older, right? So this was in the '80s. There was nothing. I went to India twice as a kid when I was six and then I was 19. And every time, you know, when I would go when I was at 19, I tried to sit in my cousin's yard and, okay, teach me some words. I really want to know. And then before you know it, like all the neighborhood is like in the street, like watching you and critiquing you. And I'm like, oh my God. And they were, you know, the materials, people would bring stuff back from India. And it was, it didn't make any sense to me. You know, there's completely different scripts. There's completely different sounds. And then I said, okay, well, in college, well, let me try to learn Hindi because that's what everyone knows about India, right? Oh my gosh, I took a college level class in Hindi and it confused the heck out of me. There were literally words in Hindi that were exactly the same sound as words in Malayalam and meaning completely different thing.
Oh, wow.
So there's a term of endearment in Malayalam called kutti. Right. And so it's something like you would say to a young girl or a young baby, oh, this precious little kutti, come here. Well, kutti in Hindi means dog.
You do not want to mix those two. No.
You don't. And there's so I gave up on Hindi because, you know, in my naive thinking, I'm like, oh, I'm going to connect with India. I'm going to connect with being Indian. And I didn't realize like how different Hindi was from Malayalam. It's a Sanskritized language. And there are these four groups of languages in South India that are Dravidian based. So they come from a different root system than Hindi. So it's not, they don't really mesh. So I didn't know that. And so I'm like, oh, foiled again. I can't learn this language. And even amongst my friends, they were like, oh my gosh, my god sister, my older god, she just made fun of me the other day. Of all people to start a Malayalam business, I never thought it would be you.
Well, that's not so uncommon, right? Like in your family for that type of either support or criticism. It comes from like within. We are not a monolith, right? Mm-hmm. We all have different perspectives and different thoughts about heritage language preservation. So it sounds like a journey for you that you mm-hmm. had definitely from childhood, moving from Brooklyn to Florida, mm-hmm. and then a lot of the similar experience that you said around like the forces of assimilation being surrounding you in your childhood.
Yes.
It's kind of baked into our school systems in a lot of ways. So it's, mm-hmm. it's not surprising. But you were, as a teenager going into adulthood, reclaiming your language, where are you at now as a mother and entrepreneur with your relationship to your language and culture and identity?
Well, I know you said you're talking about joy. It brings me so much joy. Now what do we have that I didn't have 30 years ago? YouTube, online classes, Instagram, you know, StudyGram. We've got self-published books. There's just a whole world out there that wasn't possible even 10 years ago. And I am taking Malayalam classes from a lady who calls herself Ellie Kuti. Her name is Eliza Keaton, and she's from Georgia. She's married a Malayali guy, and they teach English abroad, right? And so because she already had this linguistic background, she's like, well, of course I'll learn Malayalam, which is my husband's language, you know, out of an intellectual curiosity and also to connect with this culture. And what was interesting is she just started posting StudyGrams, and then she created a YouTube channel. And Ella Kuti's material was one of the first to ever resonate with me. And I realized because one, it was made from the vantage point of a learner. And two, it was made up from the vantage point of a native English speaker. So every time I would try to jump on a Learn Malayalam with Us YouTube channel, it would just be like this. At some point, I would hit a wall. And learning from someone who is not a native speaker, but knows your pathway because they've walked that journey, I was able to increase my language so much. And I'm so excited. I actually, Veronica, you know, one of the things that really pushed me forward in this was one, of course, becoming a mother, right? When we become moms, mm-hmm. we're like, oh my gosh, you feel that weight and responsibility of passing on your culture and your language. But when my children were really young, my mother got sick unexpectedly, and she passed away unexpectedly. And then 1 year later, my father passed away. And it was a very difficult time in my life. And my daughter was nursing. And I was just like, whoa, I'm all alone. I don't have a safety net. I don't have someone as a backup to say, okay, they're going to mm-hmm. teach my kids Malayalam, right? They weren't there anymore. And once, you know, my parents, you know, passed on, I felt that responsibility so much more. And my husband is from Mumbai. He is an immigrant to this country. He speaks so many languages. I speak so many languages. And yet we only have English in common. Mm-hmm. His native tongue is Tamil. And so he's from right next door to Kerala, but it's like Spanish and Portuguese, like what I like to tell people. You think you know, but you really don't know. And literally mm-hmm. syllables are swapped. So I spent the last few years, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to learn Tamil so I can teach my kids. My husband is fluent, so he will speak in the house, and I'm going to do everything I can to help them learn. Well, it turns out mm-hmm. he's not a very good teacher. He'll be like, yeah, it's true. And I think a lot of people, I'm sure you've seen this, a lot of people think, I'm fluent, I can teach my kids. I'm like, unless mm-hmm. you actually know how to teach, unless you know how languages are acquired, unless you know the science of education, the science of learning, it gets really hard. And I feel a lot of people give up because they make this, you know, it's just this unrealistic expectation. And then they give up, right? And so luckily, I have a learning and training background, and I am a huge nerd. And so I'm going to learn everything. And it just became this huge project. And we started making, and my husband, we had that first book of 100 words, right? And I remember sitting there going through it with my son when he was a baby. I'm like, why am I teaching you this? You can also learn this in Spanish. Yeah. You can learn this in Malayalam, and you can learn this in Tamil. I took a Sharpie and I just started writing the words phonetically, and my husband would say them, and I write them down as I hear them, and then I would sit there and read with my son, like, this, you know. And then I said, mm-hmm. Why don't I try to make some flashcards to learn with? And so that's how I started Basha Kids, was creating these bilingual learning materials for native English speakers. And one thing that really also drove me was, you know, there are a lot of, depending on the area that you live in, and now I'm outside of DC, there certainly are several Tamil schools here. I did not want to put my kids in the language school because my son has several learning disabilities. And I was like, I don't know that they're going to be inclusive. I don't know that they're going to teach to your style of learning. And for me, I was so afraid of that first break with the language, that when is it going to happen when my kid decides they hate Tamil and they hate Malayalam and they hate being Indian? Mm-hmm. Because we all go through that. Right. I was like, let me try to like buffer that as much as possible. I'm going to keep you at home. I'm going to keep teaching you, and we're going to do all kinds of creative things to get you that language. And I don't mean to knock the language schools that exist out there, but I will take a critical eye to them and say, if you're starting in the US, in the UK, anywhere where English is a dominant language, and you're starting with the alphabet, you are going to lose your kids. And they're going to be there because their parents forced them to be. So I advocate taking that different approach, which is kids learn through play. There is a place for memorization. There is a place for rote learning. But I think, and I don't know, maybe you would disagree with me on this. I really think when your language has a different script and you're in a place where you don't have support in that environment, I would push literacy back and focus on practical conversation skills. And that's what we've done. And that's what we've done with our kids. Those what are my products are based on. And what's interesting is my evolution, because it was like, oh, I'm so scared of reading and writing in these languages. Mm-hmm. And then it pulled me back, because the more I learned about linguistics, the more I learned about language, I realize, you know, these languages in South India and all South Asian languages, they are entirely phonetic. So it may sound scary. Oh my God, it has 247 letters in the alphabet, mm-hmm. not 26. English doesn't have 26 letters either, because we have letter blends, right? So if you take right. a C and an H, you got a CH. That CH is a whole separate character in our languages. I'm like, oh, that actually makes more sense. So I started going back to their roots, and now all of our products are based, I look at how it's spelled in that language. And then I go to the International Phonetic Alphabet and I match. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's that sound, here's that sound. This is what it would look like in English.
Wow. And that really explains how you were able to help me at the beginning. And it's in the pre-recording, before we started recording this, I asked Anita to help me with some pronunciation. And I was like, wow, I've never had a language teacher explain it to me so clearly before. So that really speaks to the approach that you're taking and the products that you're creating, and a real knowledge of, as you said, like, if you're growing up with English as your first language, how do you leverage that as a strength to learn other languages? A lot of times we see it as a deficit of like, oh, like I have this, you know, accent, or I only grew up speaking this language, but really understanding that this is a linguistic repertoire that can be leveraged to learn a lot of other sounds and languages. Mm-hmm. And you shared so much in there that was really, really powerful that I just want to like double click on as well. Mm. You mentioned that your husband is not like the best language teacher, but speaks his heritage language fluently. Like that is so true, in the sense that like we see a lot of families that speak their heritage language fluently and think simply by speaking it to their children or speaking in the home that their children will become bilingual. And that's not necessarily the case, right? So I'd love to hear from your perspective, if you do speak your heritage language fluently, mm-hmm. what do you think is necessary to ensure that your child is you can never like ensure 100% that your child is bilingual, but that you give your child the best chance for becoming bilingual.
You know, the very first thing I tell parents is it's take the weight off your shoulders because it's not up to you for your child to become bilingual. Bilingualism, learning another language, is a very long journey and it takes many years. So you need to shift that mindset and think about, I'm building a foundation for them. But for my child to truly become fluent, and if you look at how many hours it takes to really learn these languages and to become that, you know, ever, what is it, the C2 level balanced bilingual, I mean, you're talking 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. At some point, your child has to pick up the mantle and study themselves and put in the effort themselves. So walk yourself back from that pedestal to, okay, how do I give them a launching pad? And one of the best things I advocate for parents is outsource. This is a parenting tip, period, in anything. Do not make yourself solely responsible for teaching them anything, because
yes,
it's clouding your relationship as a parent. And yes, this is a language you use at home, but that doesn't mean that you are solely responsible or fully capable. And we have so much other stress to deal with. You've got to keep track of all their activities. You've got to do the laundry. Oh my gosh, the meal planning for the week, right? And on top of this, now you didn't pick up your clothes off the floor and I'm supposed to also teach you a language. Like, it all kind of gets messy. But I think if you can find a class, I highly advocate putting kids in classes, only because it's going to give you a structure and it's going to give you a rhythm. You have to be organized. And you also have to really understand what you're up against. Okay, so you have to commit. Okay, you put your kid in the class, you're not done. Okay, it's not basta here. Okay, you have to help them do their homework. You have to reinforce the lessons. You've got to set a goal every day for some kind of an interaction, right? And the more parents realize like what they can do to support learning versus I am opening up a spigot and pouring all my knowledge in, right? That's just going to run out. It's not going to stick for the kids. Outsource, be in a place of support, have a lot of tools at your disposal, which means you're going to hit language exposure from so many different angles. And you've got to be able to pick whatever works in that moment. Songs, movies, podcasts, audiobooks. You know, how are you thinking about how your child is hearing the language, how your child is maybe seeing the language on a screen? You know, are you thinking about nursery rhymes? Do you have books in your house? Do you have books where they can go to the shelf and sit and read by themselves and discover? Do you have other families in your circle that they can interact with in their language? Because at the end of the day, obviously kids learn through play and kids love to learn with other kids, right? And so if they see another playmate who's also using the same language, I know you've heard of bilingüitos, and they have these grupo, right? The immersion play groups. I think it's the most fantastic idea of doing a bilingual play date, but that also means that us parents have to facilitate that. So it does take planning. But it's really not that hard. I've seen the benefits of this method where, you know, I have a loose plan. I have a lot of things available to my kids. I stress, instead of grammar, I've stressed pronunciation at home. And the reason is because that's one of the hardest things to master when you're away from your homeland. And as we talked about, there's sounds that are made in these languages that use different parts of the mouth. You will never use that in English. So if that's the pain point, find the pain points and hone in on them. When you hone in on the pain points, it's just going to make them feel more confident. And so I was so excited. We just put our kids in their very first Tamil class ever. Okay, and you have to separate them. They actually called from two different devices to start fighting with each other. But, you know, the first class, this little old lady, like they call her this grandma, this abuela called, in from Chennai, that's the capital of Tamil Nadu. And I said, Auntie, you know, what do you want me to call you? Do you want me to call you Auntie? She said, call me Pati. Pati means grandmother. I was like, That made me like, oh, that's so nice. So I was like, okay, Patti, I want you to know the kids have prepared some statements for you. So before you even start, they're going to tell you some things about themselves. And she was like, jaw to the ground. She's like, what? This is the first time I've ever encountered, you know, a family from the United States. Not just that you are prepared. She stopped my daughter in the middle of something. She's like, oh, let's count. And they're like, oh, we know how to count. They started counting for her. She's like, geez, my whole first 2-3 lessons are gone. But she stopped my daughter in the middle and she's like, wow, you know, you have such a pure Tamilian accent. I can't tell you're from America. I've never heard this before from a kid. And credit to my daughter for trying. And she actually taught me when I was telling you about Tamil. She's the one who taught me how to say it properly. Because I kept giving her the pointers. I'm like, here's scientifically all the ways to make the sound. One day she said it so beautifully. I'm like, that's what it's supposed to sound like. Oh, it's like light bulb went off. And because she did it, I actually learned from her. So that was the biggest joy. I mean, I could die happy right now because this little grandma in Chennai said my kids have a Tamilian accent. I was so proud of that. And I'm like, sentences, grammar, they're all going to come, you know, but if we don't make this investment now, you know, and my kids are already older, right? My son's already in middle school, right? If we don't put this effort in when they're young, and I know it feels like a lot. When kids are young, it's like enough, like, oh my God, I have to get you to bed on time. And it feels like a lot of pressure. But if you get a tribe, you know, if you find people in a community that can support you instead of nit, 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 pick, 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 it's not going to work. Why are you doing that? I mean, it really matters who you surround yourself with. It absolutely is possible for someone who's not a native speaker of this language to help my kids learn almost native pronunciation. And I was able to pull from my husband what he needed to help them learn, right? And kudos to him that he was open-minded and willing to be taught a different way.
Right, right. That's beautiful. I think that that also is such a great story for folks to hear who are not native speakers of their heritage language, who might be fearful of, like, do I pass on poor pronunciation to my child? I think first off, for me, like, that was something that was in my head, because I know that I don't sound like a native speaker as much as I try to get as close to the native accent as possible. But I also in my head had to switch the idea of, like, and if they have an accent, so what? Like, there's nothing wrong with an accent.
No, there's not.
And, but to what you said about not being the only source of input, because it's a lot all on your shoulders, that your children are likely going to grow up with a native like accent if they are surrounded by authentic sources of input. And they hear that enough. And if they're practicing it from an early age, that their, you know, muscles in their mouth and their tongue and everything are just so much more flexible and less stubborn as you get older. Anita, I also want to, just for our listeners, to share, you mentioned Bilingüitos, and we'll put the link in our show notes, but they do, they have great resources online for organizing play dates, I think only in the Spanish language now, so not beyond that, but they have a way for you to organize regional play dates through them. So you can be anywhere in the U.S. and organize a Bilingüitos play dates, which is a pretty cool feature, like you said. So we'll put that in the show notes for folks who are interested in that. You were going to say something?
Oh, well, you know, even though there's so much out there with Spanish content, there's a lot out there, even with Mandarin or Arabic. And I'm like, if those are not the languages you speak, who cares? Go out there and see what they're doing. Take their model and try to replicate that at home. You know, if you put time and energy, you can find a way to do these things. So I love, you know, I follow all of these other creators because they give me ideas about what I can do at home. And I will tell you, I use Spanish to help my kids. One of the very first podcasts I did, Veronica, was speaking tongues with, I'm going to miss her last name, but her first name is Elle. And every episode she does is a different language. She's going to map all 7,000 languages, I think, at some point. And at the end, she's like, you know, what's the first word that comes to your mind? And she gave me a phrase, and I said it in Spanish. Because I was raised in Miami, and it's like, and I speak Spanish with a Cuban accent. I'm like, and it was kind of like, yes, and also kind of sad, like, it's not Malayalam, but it's not. But I, then I decided, you know what? I'm going to go full bore with this. I'm going to go in with Spanish with my kids. They're learning Spanish at school. And you know what? We're going to learn Spanish and Tamil at the same time. And I am able to use Spanish to teach them concepts that you can't translate from English, right? So just yesterday, we were talking about pronouns. And we're talking about tú and usted. Right. Mm-hmm. And I was like, so in Tamil, this is the same. We have me and ningal, right? And so that concept of a formal way of speaking to elders doesn't exist in English. But I could pull from Spanish to help drill that point into the kids. So use what you have. And there's no reason, you know, I think people see it as this is my Spanish brain and this is my Tamil brain and like, you know, my Danish brain and my Hindi brain. No. Like I'm a messy person about this, but I don't think you can say on Tuesdays we speak Tamil, on Wednesdays we speak Spanish. I'm like, I could not keep up with that schedule. So I know a phrase or a word, I'll choose to say it in Spanish to the kids. My goal is, look, you hear English all the time. So in this house, it's going to be a melange. It's a multilingual household. And my kids also naturally pick up Hindi because they watch the movies. They are avid cricket fans, thanks to their dad. And so they can tell you everything you need to know about this game that's played in Commonwealth countries or former British colonial countries. And they know all the calls in Hindi. I'm like, this is the way the world is moving. Yeah. I see us moving towards a world with our kids where you can code switch throughout the day, where you can trans language all the time. You can have the way it would be perfectly acceptable to say something in English, start your sentence in English. In the middle, you get to Spanish. And then, I can't find that word. You know, I'm going to say it in Tamil because that's how the world is moving. And I think that's fine. I think people have to be open to language being messy, to being mixed, because what's better? Should you just close the door and should you just be entirely strict about it? It's not going to work, you know? And sometimes, like I said, I can explain concepts better in Spanish than I can in Tamil, or I can explain things better in Tamil. There's certain words, right, in certain languages that convey, it takes you like 3 or 4 sentences in English to explain it. And I'm like, why not embrace all of it? So, you know, in our house, even I've made silly little laminated labels all over the house, and it has the word in 3 languages. So it has Spanish, it has Tamil, and Malayalam. And it's just stuck all over the house. It's like a little scavenger hunt. Right? And the funny thing is there's one word, it's exactly the same word across. And believe it or not, it's mesa.
Oh, wow.
Table in Spanish is basically, it's mace in Malayalam and meshai in Tamil. And guys, you're going to write and say, she got it mixed up. Well, okay, fine. I don't have my Google Translate in front of me right now. But I'm telling you, it's exactly the same word across 3. And it was so cool for the kids to see that. Like, wow, we really are all connected. Right?
Yeah, that's so important for kids to see those cognates and really start making connections. That's also what the research shows around the bilingual, multilingual brain, right? That it is able to handle complex problem solving because it, you know, has different situations, different contexts, different cultural settings, different languages, and moving fluently between these languages, as you mentioned, is a strength, right? We might, I think we think about the concept of like translanguaging, which now in academia and in school settings is being more embraced as a positive thing. But not too long ago, like, you know, translanguaging, going back and I wouldn't say going back and forth between languages, but using your full linguistic repertoire, no matter what language it is in, was seen as a negative thing. Like, oh, don't use Spanglish because that's not, you know, that's not a language of anything. Use Spanish or English. Mm-hmm. And really what we're seeing now is that that is a skill to do that type of code switching, to be able to read the cultural context and use the correct linguistic repertoire given that situation. So I'm right there on track with you. Anita, it has been absolutely amazing digging into this conversation with you. It is so clear your love of languages and your really strong dedication to heritage language preservation. Before we close out with our final question, I wonder if you can share with our listeners what mindset recommendation you would share with them in order to dig into the hard work of heritage language preservation.
Okay. It's funny. I actually heard this in a yoga class the other day. And I was like, oh, this is perfect for languages. But it's release the judgment. Okay. Mm. Release the judgment. Release the expectations and or expectations for a certain outcome and be in the moment. I'm not saying don't plan ahead. I'm not saying don't have a plan. But I'm saying don't, if you get it wrong, if you make a mistake, if you didn't meet the goal or your kids didn't come through that day or they were just really a bunch of brats on the online class that day, it happens, right? It happens. But it's a really long arc to learn languages. You know, if when you sit back and think about that fluency, I would say for some of these South Asian languages, think and you're not in that environment, you're going up outside of that environment, plot yourself 10 years. When you take that off your shoulders, say, wait, 10 years, I don't have to be responsible for that. I'm not going to judge myself for being a bad parent. I'm not going to judge myself for being a bad learner or a bad speaker, because every day it's growing and it's accumulating. So it's just hard. You know, we get caught up in the moment and we're like, oh, I'm never going to reach it. But if you really do release a judgment about what's the right way to learn the language, what's the right way to do these things. And the other mindset is you have to accept when you're raising kids in a country that is overwhelmingly monolingual, raising a child, a bilingual child, it's a radical act of nonconformity. And this is the hardest thing for immigrants, and you know, it's cultural, right? Like, no, we have to conform to everything at all of the time because that's how we got here, right? And I think that's where a lot of discomfort comes from for people's like, I want to be like everyone else. But you're not able to be because your goal is not in line with what that country, its goals are, what that country's policies are set for. Our schools, our doctors, they are not institutionally set up to support bilingual, let alone multilingual learners. So accept that. Accept that raising your kid to speak another language other than English, it is an act of nonconformity. And yes, you are a nonconformist. And then sit with it and then release the judgment and just enjoy your kids, enjoy your time, take that weight off your shoulders, you know, invest in resources. Thank God you have this podcast, right? And then people could get that support. We all need a support group. This is really hard and it's tiring. And sometimes you really do feel alone, but you're not alone. And thank God for Instagram, because I found so many people I never would have met them otherwise who have the same mindset as me or who are on the same track as me. So don't be shy about finding people outside of your circle. Your friends and your family are not doing what you're doing, that's fine. You don't have to take the criticism, right? And it doesn't mean you're doing something wrong. Just stick to your values and enjoy your children while you have them before they're too big.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much for those words of wisdom. And for a new title that I'll be trying on, nonconformist parent here, but really, really true, right? In a society that is majority monolingual, that does not in its structures, in its history, support multilingualism. It is an act of resistance. It is an act of nonconformity. And there are others to support along the way. So no wonder it feels hard, right? When you add those titles to it. But we're here in the journey together to support one another. And thank you, Anita, so much for sharing your narrative, for sharing your story, for sharing so much of the work that you do, and supporting other families and educators in the process. So can you share with us where people can find you?
Absolutely. My husband says I live on Instagram. My handle is BHASHAKIDS, Bhasha Kids. And you can find us at BhashaKids.com. And we have products in Tamil, Malayalam, and Hindi. And we are expanding to 7 more languages. I'm hoping 4 more will be out by the end of the summer. I'm working really hard in that. We're going to India for the month of July to make this work. We're looking to expand to a podcast, to audio content for children to learn. And what I do, everything I do is based around learning. So I'm not going to be someone who puts out products that are not helpful to learners and not helpful to teachers. I really want these products to be used in a classroom. And I am working with a group. This is our sneak announcement. I'm working with a group of self-published authors. It's very hard to write bilingual books that are traditionally published. That's not something that traditional publishers will do. So you take the reins and you self-publish. And I'm working with a group of self-published authors to put out a bundle of books in these languages so that you can have in your nursery, you know, in your children's library, the books that you need to start your journey and reinforce your journey.
Wow. Wow. Okay. That is huge. That's so important. We can start a whole nother podcast conversation about multilingual resources, books, and diversity in children's literature. So Anita, thank you for leading the way on that. We are so excited to learn about that. Let us know. We'll support it on our platforms once that's ready to share. It's been such a joy to have you on the podcast to hear your story. As we close out, can you share what's bringing you joy these days?
Oh my gosh. You know, what's bringing me joy is two things. One is, you know, it's taken a lot of years. It's been 4 years that I've been working on Bhasha Kids, and it's not exactly a charity, but it is definitely for the love of passing on these languages and the, you know, the responsibility that I feel towards it. I've built the most amazing relationships with people that I practically feel like I've got a BFF in Australia and a BFF in the UK, but like people I never would have met if I had not started this journey. And I am so happy and heartened to know them. And then my other joy is that Bhati in Chennai said that my kids had the native accent. And then she said, oh, your appa must be Tamil to you every day, na? And I was like, and behind him, like, it was me. I was standing behind the computer, it was me. But that brought me more joy than I thought it would. But I finally feel like, oh, all of this was for something. I am making progress. My kids do respect and like their language. That was all I really wanted. So I feel like I had a little success with, they didn't grow up like me is the way to put it, right? They didn't grow up on that journey of, I hate myself and I hate my language, but they're like, I have no problem. Yeah, sure. I speak another language. So that's the joy that I have that I was able to do that for my kids.
Beautiful. Thank you, Anita, so much for sharing your joy with us and for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for this opportunity, Veronica. I love what you're doing. Keep it up.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to share this podcast with a friend or colleague. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform. Your ratings and reviews help us to keep the podcast lights on. We can't do this without your support. Every subscription, share, follow, download, and review makes a big difference and helps others find our show. Also, we love hearing from you. Tell us what you think of the podcast. Email us at hello@thelanguageproject.co. You can also slide into our DMs on Instagram at Talking to Grandma. Talking to Grandma is owned by the Language Preservation Project. Rebecca De Leon is our editor and producer. The artwork for Talking to Grandma was created by Nancy Guevara, and I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. See you next episode.